My name is Lawrence Allen.
I'm Ronald Shaw.
I'm Rahul Vora.
And this is Bad Time Radio.
All right, hey. I'm recording.
Excellent. Everyone ready?
Ready.
I'm ready.
Okay, welcome to another episode of Bad Time Radio. We have a special guest with us. You know him from the Cannonball podcast. You know him from having the single best account on Twitter. Welcome, please, your friend and mine, Daniel Dottie. Daniel, how are you this fine evening?
I'm very good. I'm just so chuffed to know that my posting is among the best online. Yeah, I'm doing great, fellas. It's really exciting to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you.
Yeah, it is really good to have a guest. This evening we're talking about The Demon Tree, which is an episode of Dark Fantasy that aired on December 5th, 1941. We've covered one episode of Dark Fantasy before, episode 2, of course, the famous Gorilla Pilot episode. This is a series that is, I think its greatest strength and most glaring weakness is that it is utterly bereft of irony. It has no idea that the things it is doing could ever be considered funny, which means that occasionally it will knock it out of the fucking park because it will do something absolutely insane and it will hit so big. And occasionally you end up with a gorilla opera singer.
You gotta appreciate that they just like, they have the balls to do it. You know, they're just like, this isn't a bit. We're just going with it. You know, they're committing.
And I think really the radio format really adds a lot to that, because there were several in this episode I listened to. This was my first time with Dark Fantasy, although it has a wonderful intro. there were never moments where the sheer goofiness was really ratcheted up by the fact that all of the performers had to explain to each other what they were doing.
Oh, yeah. Love that, dude. That's like one of my favorite parts about the radio is when they just like start narrating what's happening out loud.
The point where at one point a guy is narrating his own death. At this point, dude, you could just not. You could back off and just let it happen.
Or it's a bit struggle. Like writing. It's a bit like writing a story entirely out of, as you know, Captain style dialogue. It's really incredible. It really pops.
But it kind of transposes with like how good the acting is in this, because some of the line delivery in this episode specifically is just like really terrifying. The actors just really, really kind of nail some of the stuff. So at some points they're just saying really stupid dialogue and kind of weird delivery, and at other points they're giving these like horrifying wails of when they're dying. And I don't know, it just kind of the dichotomy really works really well, kind of makes it funnier and scarier at the same time.
Yeah. So if you'll allow
me to slip into some French, it makes for a piquant soupçon.
Oh, shit. We got us a man of culture.
The only possible way of being intelligent.
Yeah, I believe this was actually your post, but we were passing around an image of a Frenchman explaining that only French let you have rational thought, and that's of course why we are so just dirt stupid.
That's right. We're saddled with the twin dullard minds of the Teuton and the Celt merged together in the bastard tongue of English.
Yeah, so anyways, going around the room, spoiler-free, would you recommend this episode? I will go first. On a previous episode, I have actually called this, like, really good, and I maintain that it is a minor classic. The things that happen in it are incredibly goofy, but if you can get on its wavelength, it unfolds like a bad dream, and it has that sort of same dream logic where it almost but not quite connects, and that just makes it like excellent listening and really scary. But on the other hand, if you can't get on its wavelength, you're gonna laugh at it a whole bunch. So either way, I think you should listen to this because you're gonna have a good time. Dan, what do you think?
I would concur with your assessment. I am not very familiar with like radio drama in general. I have listened to a bunch of episodes of X-1. I don't know if you guys know that one.
I've listened to it when I was growing up. That's the sort of it's not quite experimental, but it was dramatizing the excellent science fiction of the 1950s, I believe.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's kind of my main experience with like radio drama. So I've not listened to a lot, but I feel like I have an expansive enough kind of open enough heart for works of art to kind of get on their wavelength, like you said, and not allow the silliness of the format to overtake it. And I would absolutely recommend listening to it. It's, you know, it's what, you know, 22, 23 minutes. I listened to it on my lunch break today. It was a really good time. I was eating this just beautiful Mignola Tangelo. I've been very upset with the quality of citrus I've been able to get lately. I finally got a good Tangelo. Anyway, that again, that's a digression, but I'm just saying it matches well with the Tangelo. You should listen to it.
That sounds wonderful.
So it was sort of like the dichotomy of trees, because on one hand they give you delicious fruit, and on the other hand they murder you for going into forest.
They strangle you after being born from a blood acorn.
Yeah. And Ronald, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I will concur with both of you. I actually really liked this episode. Yes, it's kind of stupid. I did find, I've listened to it a couple times now. I did find that, I think the first time I was listening to it, something about the music and, like, I don't know, the guys screaming when they died, there was like a point where, like, I got a little bit of chills from the episode, even though it's really dumb. I don't know. Something just hit right, and I don't know. I liked the episode quite a bit, even though I kind of did like the goofiness too. It's just kind of works. I don't know.
Yeah, one thing about Dark Fantasy is that it has this incredibly oppressive organ score in all of the episodes, which means that the ones that are accidentally funny are incredibly funny, because it's like there's this musical straight man to everything that happens. And then the ones that are scary are extra scary, because oppressive organ music is a note you don't hear much in horror movies anymore, and therefore hits the modern ear even harder. Anyways, okay, let's go ahead and roll for the summary. Ronald, do you want evens or odds?
Like odds.
I have rolled a D4, and I have gotten a 1. Ronald, you're up. What happens in this episode? The
you guys
demon
are gonna have to,
tree.
You guys are going to have to help me a little bit, because some of it is just, like, some of it kind of slips, the details slip my mind, because they're not really that important to the story. But, okay, so it starts off.
Wait. One interruption before we start. The first thing we hear on all these Dark Fantasy is you hear a guy go, Dark Fantasy. And then there will be someone say, I am the whatever of the whatever, which is always the sort of supernatural thread of the episode. And in this one, it's, I am the ghost of the demon, or the spirit of the demon tree. And I noticed that the demon tree has kind of a Tony mid-Atlantic accent, which I found quite charming. I don't know how I expected tree to sound, but...
No, that
always
is
probably...
Go ahead, Dan.
I was going to say, I always love to be menaced by kind of Katharine Hepburn. It adds a whole sort of classiness to the affair.
Yeah, definitely. No, that's one of my favorite parts about Dark Fantasy is the introduction. I don't know. Really nice. Sets the tone. Okay. But the story starts off with a few people, and they are at a casino, from what I can tell.
It's some kind of like mountain resort, and they complain about being stuck there, I think.
And they're gambling, though.
Yeah.
Right?
They're gambling, and yeah, I couldn't tell if that was like a. I think they were playing bridge, maybe. Do you gamble when you play bridge? I don't know.
I think you might. Wait, you definitely can, because remember in Moonraker when Hugo Drax like rips all those people off playing bridge, and then James Bond fucks him over.
Well, there we go. Yeah. So I
a random way for me to know that. That's also how I know that Koreans are the most evil people to ever live, because that James Bond book taught me. That was a joke, I should clarify, but there is a part in Dr. No where Ian Fleming, he's sort of just talking, going on and on, and then he takes a half page to explain why Koreans are the most evil people who have ever existed. It's like, what the shit is this doing?
Let's just say that Ian Fleming was no stranger to skull calipers.
Yeah.
God. Well, yeah, that explains a lot. But okay, so they're at some resort, and it seems like they're stuck there. They're talking about like, oh, I'm so bored, I'm losing money, and it's these two guys and a girl talking, and they're just saying like, oh man, we've been stuck here for weeks, and we just really want to go back to England, but we can't. I don't think they really say why.
There's something about a coach, but it's not quite clear if they're definitely not snowed in. So it's not clear why the coach hasn't been there. One guy says he's been stuck there for 3 weeks. So who knows? Right.
Yeah, and so they're just, they're bored, they don't have anything to do, and they start talking about a story that the bellhop told them the night before about a forest nearby that nobody goes to, and that it's like really nice, it like is beautiful, it's got these nice trees and brooks, and Clara, the woman, interjects like, but nobody goes there, it can't be that nice.
And this guy, one of the guys has come up, like, I forget his name, the one who sort of takes everything more seriously, but yet for some reason still goes along with everything. Do you remember?
Let's see. There's Crane, Danvers, Clara, and Humphreys, I think.
Humphreys.
Humphreys is the serious one.
Yeah, Humphreys is the only one of these who gets a character, really. But Humphreys, so Clara goes, nobody goes there. And Humphreys goes, that's just it. People have gone there, pause, and never come back. For some reason, the negation of just saying, no, you're wrong, and then waiting a long time to explain why, for some reason, really made me lose my shit when I listened to it, just laughing.
I think, if I recall correctly, I think there was an organ sting on that, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I love that about these, the big reveals that Humphreys does throughout this episode are all, like, really obvious. It's, like, stuff that you figured out immediately. But, you know, he loves to do that kind of stuff. Like, but they never came back. And they're like, what do you mean they never came back? And he starts talking about how, like, a bunch of people have been strangled out in the forest. And, you know, they're like, what is that? How did they get strangled? And the myth is that they got strangled by trees.
So he's actually produced a newspaper at this point, it has an account of the last Wakefield who was found strangled in the branches of a tree. And apparently 6 Wakefields have died in the forest by being strangled. And, which makes you wonder why the fuck they keep going in that forest. Because if 5 of my ancestors had died in the same way in a forest, I'd just be like, nah, there's other places I can go.
And it's not just that their ancestors keep dying there. There's like this curse that's supposed to be on them from some witch back in the day that like had a fight with one of their ancestors. And apparently, and this is all in the newspaper article for some reason.
It's a really cool newspaper.
Yeah. From like 1857, right?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would think, to be fair to the story, newspapers of the time did print an awful lot of sensational, like, news of the weird type stuff. Honestly, with a kind of like winking attitude toward the reader, which is one of the reasons why old newspapers are a very favorite source for modern day kooks who are like, the giants were real people, the Nephilim people. They love old newspapers because they would do like hoax articles about some farmer finding a giant skeleton or whatever. But at the time, people knew that it was a gag.
Wasn't that like 25% of like Poe's literary output was like weird hoaxes that nobody remembers now?
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, like, you know, it's honestly, there's probably a lot that has been written, and I'll have to hit JSTOR to search through the archives of science fiction studies about the one of the threads coming together to create science fiction as we know it, being the newspaper hoax.
But anyways, Ronald, so I got a question for you now.
Okay.
So these people keep getting strangled into forest, right?
Right.
Because they had a falling out with a witch, right?
Well, their ancestor did.
Yeah, but so is the witch strangling them? Is this sort of a proto Blair Witch situation, or what's going on?
It's, you know, it's not the witch. It's apparently the demon tree, which is some tree that was born from an acorn that she smeared her blood in. And I guess she just put it in the forest to hunt down any of the ancestors who enter the forest, or anyone who's with that ancestor, which is just like, it's such a
I love that.
Yeah, go ahead, Dan.
I love that legalistic caveat. Like, the witch was like, okay, this is going to hunt down any of your ancestors, and also heretofore, whereas anyone else with them. Like, why?
Only if you go in the forest.
Yeah, and it specifically says that enters with them, so I'm guessing it doesn't Right. Wouldn't mess with them if they like met up with them while they're already in there or after they came back.
This old newspaper article says that the tree born from an acorn wiped with blood will strangle any descendant and also anyone he plays bridge with.
So what I was thinking, there's an interesting loophole here. One of the Wakefields could have a garden party or whatever in a forest clearing, but they would have to make sure that everyone came by a separate car, I think.
Yeah, right. It's safe. I mean, well, he would still die.
But hey, a good party, sometimes it's worth it. You ever hear that Andrew WK song, Ready to Die? It's possible it's about that. I think It might actually be about hunting people for sport, but it's hard to tell. He doesn't. For such a simple lyric, it's elusive. Anyways, enough of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I just find it kind of weird that the witch put so much effort into this, considering, it really only works if they go into this forest that clearly isn't in England, right?
The other weird thing about this is they never say what they did to make the witch mad. They just say that he had a falling out, which appears to imply that he and the witch used to be really good friends, and then they had some drama, and the witch overreacted.
I kind of assumed that him and the witch, like, broke up. Like, they were in a relationship.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's, yeah. Or maybe it is just a falling out, and, like, this is what's, destined to happen to you guys. Like, Lawrence is going to say something, and, you're going to smear blood
and I'm
going to
plant
podcast.
An acorn.
Yeah.
Hear blood on a podcast, and then whenever I go on the internet, the podcast will strangle me.
You're gonna smear blood on a snowball blue and bury God. It.
What monstrosity would that awake? So anyways, they read this article and then they're like, whoa, that's hilarious. And the guy who just came up, Crane, is like, my mother-in-law said my mother was a Wakefield. I wonder if I'm related to this Sir Thomas Wakefield. And they're all like, oh, of course not. It's just a silly story. Why don't we go out to the forest and see if there's a real demon tree out there?
But then Hubert or whatever, Humphreys says,
yeah, please deliver the line.
Wouldn't it be odd if the whole thing were true? And in my notes, I say, no shit, dude. It's not normal.
Yeah. He's like, I would love to respond to that with like, no, I think it would be fine if it was true. That's not weird.
Yeah, because he's like, I was just daydreaming about, wouldn't it be weird if that was real? And wouldn't it be odd if we never returned? And it's like, dude, this is like one of those like deep questions in high school when somebody comes up. It's like, what would you do if you died right now? Like, I don't know, man. Like, that doesn't mean anything to me. Like, what's the point of fantasizing of just like, oh, dude, what if we went out into this forest and just died?
What if we got strangled by a tree? What would my life look like if I lived in a world where trees sometimes strangle people? Anyways, yeah. So.
Beautiful. So then they're like, okay, well, let's walk out. And they're all really excited to go because they have nothing else to do, I guess. And Clara's like, well, don't say that I wasn't into it, and goes with them, I guess. She has like a little bit of reticence even from the beginning, but I guess she's bored enough that she goes along with it. So they all go out to this forest. And what is the expression that he uses? Some really funny expression.
He says the forest is as dense as Father Time's beard.
Father Time's beard. Which is like, I have never heard that expression before, but apparently they just can't even enter the forest. It's so thick. They're just like looking for an entrance into it.
I think this further highlights the flaw in the witch's plan, because not only is her vengeance confined to a specific geographic area, but it's also a geographic area that's quite hard to get into, apparently. And it really does suggest that the Wakefields are really working hard to make this shit happen to them.
Really? No, you really got to go out of your way. Yeah. Like, it's, the witch doesn't make it easy, which is very sporting of her.
Maybe this was just like a funny joke that her and Wakefield came up with together. And they were like, hey, what if we, like, put a weird creature in this forest and, only we'll tell everyone about it, and only if they really want to go there, then they'll die from it. And, he's looking down later and he's like, why the hell do you guys keep tempting fate? Seven other people have already died. Why are you breaking into this forest again? Like, I don't know. So anyways, they finally find an entrance in, and they decide, oh, okay, let's go in. And as soon as they walk in, it's like their tone changes immediately. As soon as they walk into the forest, it's like, oh my God, it's so much colder in here. And one of them is, you know, they're completely cowards now, because one of them's like, oh, this isn't natural. It shouldn't be 20 degrees colder. Like, that's, the shade doesn't account for that. Like, it would be a little bit cooler, but it shouldn't be this much colder.
It's like, I mean, what are you, a fucking climatologist? How do you know this shit? Or I suppose an arborist. I'm sorry.
Right. I mean, he might be. That's, you know, he might be one of those old Cambridge types that who knows what was on the curriculum then. But I do think it was interesting that this was all juxtaposed with, like, there was also lines of dialogue about how beautiful it is. You know, about how, finally, there's something beautiful and interesting about this dismal resort they've been playing bridge at for 3 weeks. But it is, of course, cut with that, you know, like, oh, I don't know, it's so cold, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, and, like, that's what's kind of cool about this, is, like, I guess that's, like, kind of the temptation of the forest, is, like, it's, oh, it's this really interesting place in a place where there's nothing else to do. But, yeah, you know, it doesn't really seem to counterbalance the whole demon tree strangling you part. But
yeah, like, it's not quite enough. Like, it's not like it's, like, they hear, like, a you know, some sort of, like, mysterious song being sung or something that they're compelled to walk in and find. Or whatever. No, it's just like, oh, it might be cool to take a walk. I'm bored.
Yeah,
so I'm not,
it's
really
slightly,
I don't know,
interesting.
If that's enough. Yeah, it's slightly more interesting than this dismal resort they're at. You know,
I'll risk getting strangled by a demon and going straight to hell because I am that bored.
I'm gonna tell you something right now. We're sitting around. We're playing bridge. I am fucked if I'm gonna keep playing bridge. I would rather go outside. Get strangled by a blood-smeared demon witch's tree and sit here and look at your face across the bridge table. Let's go.
Yeah. I am not bidding four spades again on this damn game. I don't know how to play bridge.
It's bad. Right. It's bad enough. Let me tell you something. It's bad enough that I would read bridge column next to the funnies every day, and I hated that. I don't know why I play this game. That might be, I don't know how old you guys are, if you ever did, like, grow up reading the funnies, but that always confused the hell out of me, like, and all the other things they had, the horoscope, right, and Dear Abby next to it, and also the bridge column, this block of impenetrable jargon about a fucking card game that no one under the age of 80 plays, and it was just, I read it every time. I have to understand why anyone would read this. I never did.
Dude, totally. I used to read that too. I used to read the bridge column, and, like, I didn't really know how to play the game, because I could play hearts, which I think is kind of similar.
Yeah, it's in the same sort of game family. Yeah.
Yeah, but, like, bridge is a lot more complicated because the betting is so weird, or the bidding. And it's a teams game, right? Like,
yeah,
you play with the people across from you. Yeah, and so, like, this, I don't know if you've ever read it, Lawrence, but this section gives you, like, it has the cards, it has, like, what everyone has in their hands, and then it's like, this is what you should be betting, and it goes over the logic of, like, why this, each person should bid what they have, and it's, like, this really complex formula, and it's like, I don't really, how would this even, like, I guess maybe it's just a practice problem, but, like, I can't imagine that you're, like, okay, I know this exact hand. I remember from Sunday the bridge advice that they gave me. I know what my bid should be. Yeah.
And then like, you still lose, and the other person's like, I read the bridge column too, you fool.
No. I planned foiled. Yeah. So, you know.
So anyway. They're in the forest.
They were probably reading those. Yeah, oh, so they, yeah. Yeah, I mean, That's what compelled them to basically kill themselves.
Exactly.
So they go into this forest, and it's, you know, it's colder immediately, and it gets darker too. And but they trek on, and Clara says, like, oh, I'm very good with directions. I'll be able to find our way back. And so they kind of continue through the forest, and yeah, and like Dan said, it's like this beautiful area, and they see all these kind of pretty cool, like, scenery, and they finally come across this tree that kind of stands out to them. but it looks kind of strange.
They say it looks almost like a person, so obviously I instantly pictured an ant, because, you know, what else are you going to do?
Yeah. I kind of pictured that too, but it's like, ants don't really look that much like trees, because they, like, have, I mean, I don't really think a person in a tree, you know what I mean? Like, I guess maybe it just had two arms, and, like, I don't know, what did you, I guess,
I had,
you know,
I kind of pictured like a face and then like the branch, like two big branches kind of folding down like arms and the rest of it kind of looking almost like a willow. I don't know. This is something about this story. It absolutely could not work in, I think, any other medium. If you tried to do it as a short story, the fact that you had to describe all of the things that were happening, many of which are objectively silly, would drive home the silliness and break the spell. And if you tried to do it in a movie, obviously the tree itself would look dumb, and then everything it does would also look stupid. But on the radio, because they don't have to actually explain it, it works, like I said, pretty well.
Yeah,
that's true. It's all on you to imagine it, and you know, that's kind of the dream quality, right? Like you have, you know, at no point would I think been able to like make a sketch of this tree or some kind of like even like anatomical diagram or whatever, but it evokes imagery very effectively, if a bit sillily.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think that's, the fact that I couldn't really picture it was part of the reason that, like, at one point in the story, I got a little bit of chills from it. Cause just like, it's kind of this Lovecraftian horror of like, I don't even really know what I'm listening to. So they're, you know, they say it looks kind of human, and then one of them goes up and touches it and says, "Oh my god, it feels like skin, human skin."
And this is such a nightmarish image. Like, this is the best thing in the whole like radio play, I think.
Go ahead.
The idea that you walk up to like a tree and it looks like bark, and then you touch it and suddenly it feels like skin. That is just, I don't know why, but that is so upsetting to me.
I love this part because it's like, that is a very disturbing image, but the way that it's kind of delivered is so cartoonish, because I feel like the guy who's doing it is like this really pompous English guy, and he's like, "It's skin, human skin," and it's just, I don't know, the way he said it, it's like this kind of horrifying, terrible thing, but he says it like just really cartoonishly. The dichotomy there is really funny and kind of scary at the same time.
And then they make the kind of baffling decision of everyone going up and touching this weird ass tree. And I'm kind of on the fence about this, because on the one hand, you want to experience something like that for yourself. But on the other hand, if someone is like, "Hey, I've just described the most nightmarish thing that you've ever heard. You want to go touch it too?" I don't know how I'd react.
Oh, I'd touch it. Dude, if I was out there looking for the demon tree and somebody touched a tree and said it feels like skin, I would be like, I got to feel this bad boy.
Then for some reason, one of them goes, "Hey, Humphreys, you touch it." And Humphreys goes, "No thanks." Yeah. And then they're
"Sorry." Once again, Humphreys, you know, out of the gate as the best character. The only one who seems to, you know what to do. When you're in the creepy forest of the legendary tree, you don't touch the weird tree, you know?
But,
I don't know. He just missed out on touching the bark skin, because didn't really help him in the end.
That's true. And also, what else are you going to do? Go back to the bridge dungeon? Come on, touch the tree.
Yeah, right.
Are you die, a
accept
touch
your fate.
It.
So
maybe try stabbing it. See what happens. I don't know. It's a demon tree. Do what you want. Is it flammable?
Like,
find out.
If I felt a tree and it felt like skin, would you cut it to see if it bled?
Christ, I don't know. On the one hand, I'm really curious about it, but on the other hand, at that point, it's like, well, is this some kind of demon tree?
Sentient? Yeah. Oh, at this point, when they come out, they're like, "Hey, we heard the myth about a demon tree out here that strangles people," and then they find this weird tree with bark-like skin, like nothing like they've ever seen before. You know, I just feel like at that point, you'd be like, well, you know, maybe we should get the fuck out of here, you know? Like, maybe this is exactly what the myth was. I don't know. At that point, I'd be like, I'm skeptical, but like, I'm willing to accept it for now.
I think in a modern story, there'd be some kind of twist as opposed to you hear a myth. The myth turns out to be true. Everyone is killed by the myth.
Yeah, yeah.
But I kind of admire this almost primal directness of it.
Yeah. Yeah, right. They just, it was exactly what we thought. And for some reason, we're still doubting it, even though it's right in front of our eyes.
They don't even do the like question of why is the tree killing us? And then at the end, the guy's like, oh, shit, my mom's was named Wakefield. They tell you that before they go into the forest. There's no misdirection here at all.
Well, and funnily enough, the Wakefield guy is the first one to die.
But the tree just keeps coming. Yeah.
It's pretty cut and dried there, isn't it? I do think that's funny that we have an element of this is, I think, the first example I've ever seen of Chekhov's mom's maiden name.
Chekhov's mom's maiden name.
Chekhov's blood smeared acorn.
Chekhov's blood smeared acorn.
You got a blood smeared acorn in the first act. You got to have a demon tree strangle a guy in a hotel in the third.
If people are not going to know what to do with it if it doesn't have it. Yeah.
Oh, man. God. Yeah. Okay. So then they touch this tree and then they're like, all right, well, let's go. Let's return because it's getting all dark, even though it shouldn't be dark yet.
Apparently it's some kind of supernatural storm that just makes it dark. There's no rain or wind or anything that we can tell. It just suddenly got incredibly dark.
Yeah. And so they're leaving, and Crane, one of the guys, I think he was the first one to touch the tree, is going a little nutty, and they tell him to calm down, and they get lost. I think they get a little lost in the forest. Like they think that they're on the way back, but it doesn't look familiar. And Claire, even though she said she had a good sense of direction, she's not figuring it out, and she says, "Oh, it's so dark, I can't see anything." And at that point, Crane just kind of loses it, and he starts, you know, like yelling at them all. Oh, I'm not gonna die here. And they say, just wait here, and we'll find the exit and come back for you. And he's like, I'm not gonna wait here. Are you out of your mind? And he just like runs off.
I like that their solution to his stupid plan was an equally stupid plan.
Oh yeah, no, I mean that was a terrible plan.
Because him waiting there, I mean, functionally it's almost the same as him running off, and. They're not coming back for him. He seems like a jerk. Nah, he doesn't. He doesn't have a character at all. I'm sorry I said that.
Yeah, none of them really have characters except for Humphreys.
Crane, I'm sorry you got killed by a demon tree. I have no grudge against you.
But the tree did.
The tree just needed the tree needed a kill, you know? We gotta, you're just out there, you're tree fodder. You fulfilled your historical role.
It hasn't killed anyone since 1857. Imagine how bored it must be.
That's literally its only job.
That's what it was born for. What it was made to do.
Just
I can't hold it against the tree.
Yeah. So Crane runs off, and they're like, well, let's continue on without him. And then almost immediately, you just hear him screaming. And these, like, kind of like death wails that some of the actors have, I think are part of the probably the creepiest part of the episode, because like for the most part, I think that the actors are kind of like, you know, they're just like comical radio actors. They like, they have really good diction and they pronounce everything really, really well. When they do these like death cries, they are like really acting on them and they're just like real screams of terror. I don't know. I thought they were like pretty creepy. And they hear him and they say like, oh, that's Crane. And they basically give him up.
Oh, I remembered something we forgot a little bit.
Okay.
So the reason he went crazy was that he started feeling a tree like brushing up against him, but he couldn't see it, which will highlight one of the demon tree's least used powers, which is that apparently it can turn invisible.
Yeah, or maybe it just blends in with the trees around it.
But he said there weren't any trees nearby at all. Right. So in addition to being, you know, an ambulatory tree, it's also the predator.
Which I don't really understand, like, how they were in a giant clearing with no trees around when earlier he was like, oh, yeah, this forest is thick as Father Time's beard. Like, I imagined it was just, like, thickets and trees and, you know, everywhere. But then apparently
They should have done something like, this clearing is as open as Father Time's bald head.
Well, I like the idea of the demon tree getting together with the other trees and being like, hey, guys, move, make a clearing. I'm going to turn invisible and fuck with that dude. It's going to be hilarious. Come on.
He's not going to understand.
And again, that does have precedent in Tolkien. You know, you have the Ents herd of the forest there to block the... I forget what happens.
The horns, the trees that have become like Ents, as Ents have become like trees, and they show up and eat the that's army right. That's running away from... God damn it, I'm such a fucking nerd. No, I'm not. I've had sex with a woman. Anyone who says I'm a nerd is a liar. Yeah. I have done it with women. Well, a woman.
You know, Lawrence, people who claim that usually haven't. Just
hey,
saying.
You know what? I'm going to... Hey, Bianca.
Oh, Bianca. No.
You know what? I'll be right back. Except my wife's almost certainly not going to play along with this bit, but one sec.
How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing well. I didn't get strangled by a tree today.
Tell them I've had sex, B.
I'm feeling like that's a win for me, too. You know,
just
like it's,
yeah. We've done it. If you want.
There's some days that you can't say that, but
okay,
today I could say
so,
I wasn't strangled by a tree.
Yeah, Lawrence has had sex.
See, guys? I told you.
Oh, wow. Oh, hey, okay.
Bianca,
my apologies.
If you're being held against your will, blink twice.
Bianca, if you're being held against your will, Ronald wants you to blink twice. He didn't blink.
Yes!
Anyways, sorry, guys. Was
right.
that bit worth
that's
it?
That's all right. Lawrence is up on the big board.
Of sex havers.
Anyways. Yeah, I think that one's going in the books now. All right.
Anyway.
Anyways. Right. So they Crane runs off and you hear him scream, and then they continue through the forest a little ways, and then Humphrey says, hey, look at that in the clearing. Golden phosphorus. Golden phosphorus light. And this is after this other guy, Danvers, said, like, oh, I still don't believe the tree, you know, just...
Well, they found what's-his-face dead by now, right?
Oh, yeah, you're right. That's right.
They say the immortal line, he stretched out on the ground like he was Organ Sting dead.
Yeah, right. He's laying there as if he was dead.
And then it turns out that in addition to laying there like he's dead, he actually is dead. And he has green stains on him.
That's right. So wait, I guess I mixed up the order here, because I guess then after that, they see the giant tree walking, and it's carrying him.
Yeah, and it's got a phosphorescent glow, and it's kind of got him, like, I imagine him almost slung over its tree shoulder, which is another, like, really creepy image that would not work in any other medium, because it's absurd, but also if you just got it in your head and don't have to work out the details, it's weird.
That's kind of a weird order of operations, because, like, I guess... Crane ran off and it killed him, and then it left so that they could find his body, and then they left, and then it came back and grabbed his body and then walked in front of him, right? Am I getting the order of operations there right?
Yeah, I believe so, yes. So the tree is a little bit of a trickster, you know, a wiseacre. It likes to mess with people in addition to strangling them to death.
Or just again, this tree is deeply bored. This is a story about a conflict among the most bored entities in the entire island of Britain.
And yeah, the tree's just trying to entertain them any way he knows how.
So presumably the tree could have just, the second they came into the forest and and they touched it, he could have just come to life, murdered them all. But it's sort of doing the tree equivalent of playing with its food almost, because it's just like, well, after these guys die, it's probably going to be another couple hundred years or something. Better stretch this shit out.
That's right, yeah. It's like when your cat is kind of like, you know, messing with the chipmunk that it managed to corner, you know.
That is kind of terrifying when that happens, though.
Yeah, I try to intervene when I see it.
Yeah, when cats like play with like a live animal when they're killing it,
and you remember, like, oh, this animal that I live with is like. It doesn't know what right and wrong is, but if it did, it would definitely choose wrong every time.
Yeah, right. Like, dude, you were just cuddling me the other minute, and now you're torturing something. I don't know. So, maybe somebody has a positive relationship with this tree, is what I'm trying to say, is my point there. You know,
there's like an old hermit living in the woods, and the tree brings some acorns every day. Just keeps him going.
Could be, as long as he's not related to Wakefield, apparently he's safe.
Turns out the tree is like this sort of fair folk style protector of the forest as long as there isn't a Wakefield there.
Well, you know, that brings up a question.
Sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, no, I was going to say that's a very good point that, like, he might be, this tree might be a relatively benign presence, except if he smells Wakefield.
It's like a shark with blood in the water.
The other thing is that the most famous Wakefield is, of course, Andrew Wakefield, notorious anti-vaxxer and all-around asshole, who, among other things, once did unnecessary medical tests on children at his daughter's birthday party to help him fake a study to prove that vaccines cause autism. So you can kind of read this as a tree just murdering the fuck out of one of, you know, the more evil men who's ever lived, which makes it kind of fun.
That's a really good point. I've noted before that it's pretty grim that staunch opposition among some corners to getting vaccinated for the worldwide pandemic currently going on is rooted in just the hatred and fear of autism.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
if only, you know,
to think about.
So yeah. If only we could have gotten Andrew Wakefield in this forest, perhaps history would have turned out
I would love to send Andrew Wakefield into the demon forest. That witch knew. She was probably on the spectrum and she saw all this.
It's very possible. Like, I like how we're like, hey guys, you know, I know this demon tree thing is pretty scary, but you know who's like way worse than this other guy who's real?
Dark fantasy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have time to do this, but it would be pretty interesting to write like a Wide Sargasso Sea style alternate narrative from the demon tree and witch's perspective of this.
Oh,
I suppose a Grendel would be a little more apropos.
I suppose, yeah, that's kind of more in the vein, yeah.
It's kind of weird that Grendel is right there in a genre fiction, but for some reason I always go for Wide Sargasso Sea, which I have not read and do not think I would like if I did.
It's all about establishing your cred for the audience, you know? You go with the deeper cut.
Yeah, I do think that Bertha got kind of a raw deal, and it's good that someone rehabilitated her. Anyways, moving on.
Yeah.
And moving on, I don't think there's too much left in this. So they see...
It does, there's not too much left, but there is my favorite line in the whole play coming up, so...
Okay, please cut in when he gets to that part. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so at this point, Humphrey says, Danvers, do you believe now? And Danvers is like, oh, of course, I mean, what other choice do I have? Which is like, okay, at least now that you saw the freaking tree carrying your dead friend through the forest, you can admit that it's real. I mean, I don't know. It's like basically at that point, what else could anyone show you? But
it would be very funny if this had a totally normal explanation. It turned out it was like a slightly more murderous version of Scooby Doo.
Yeah, it was Old Man Rivers. Yeah,
he's trying to sell the forest, and for some reason, it's the demon tree increases the value, so he's been committing some murders.
And he's also 10 feet tall.
Well, the thing about Scooby-Doo is that very frequently the villains would have some device that was very clearly like super science or supernatural that they for some reason decided to use to fake a ghost haunting instead of just selling it and making it rich. So, for instance, like invisible skis that make you look like you're floating, or a lens that you can put in a regular unpowered binocular to let you see in the dark or something. Very strange stuff. Anyways, enough of that.
Yeah,
they would
usually do it to save some property that was probably like, you know, behind on its mortgage by like two payments, so they could probably pretty easily make way more money than what they're doing. But all right, anyways, so I actually don't really remember what happens next. I know they're kind of walk through a little bit more until
there's a part I like where a guy falls into quicksand, apparently, which I was not aware was a like feature of the English forests. But
are they in England?
They're somewhere where they're either in England or on the continent. It's hard to know for sure, but it's definitely a European setting.
They gotta be somewhere where there were witches centuries ago, and there are generations of Tony guys named Wakefield.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But anyway, so the guy falls into this quicksand and he keeps trying to get out. And then he's like, I can't get out. And they're like, why? And he's like, the tree keeps pushing me back in, which really does highlight my theory that the tree can turn invisible. And it's just kind of doing that. Get back in there. Like the dismissive bat over and over and over while this guy drowns.
Yeah. And they're like, oh no, we gotta get him. And then I guess he sinks down into it, into the quicksand.
Which I'm gonna call bullshit on this a little bit. The tree is supposed to strangle people, and that is not strangling.
Yeah, maybe he drowning. Only has to strangle. He only has to strangle Wakefields, but he can kill whoever came with the Wakefield, however he wants.
So he's doing the whole variety is the spice of life thing, or maybe it's like a Hitman playthrough where he's trying to unlock some kind of bonus for doing a bunch of different death methods.
Yeah.
Oh, although, man. If it is actually a Hitman, I'm sorry, Demon Tree, but getting seen and recognized and then being alerted to your presence is going to hurt your score pretty substantially. You really want to play high stealth if you want a good score.
Yeah, but I mean, like, that's a classic Hitman experience. Everyone sees you and then you just change outfits.
I think maybe what we are looking at, though, is, again, another expression of the tree's boredom, and that he is looking for any sort of loophole in this legal code he is bound to by the witch's blood that's smeared on his acorn. You know, yeah, strangling is all well and good, but he strangled like 6 Wakefields. Let's switch it up. The witch,
yeah,
the witch
see what I can get away with.
Yeah, the witch didn't say I couldn't drown someone in quicksand. You know,
yeah,
it's he's pulling an Air Bud. You know, the rules don't say a dog can't play basketball.
Nothing in the rule book says a demon tree can't do things other than strangle people. I'll allow it.
Yeah, there's no real rule. There's no real judge anymore, but you know, maybe somebody's still enforcing it, or maybe just the tree has to enforce it on himself.
It's the forest's code. I mean, this tree is a tree of his word.
Do you think the tree had that kind of like recognition of like, oh God, there's no God to control me and my actions. I could break the laws, so the only one to enforce them is myself. And like, he kind of came to like this.
So you're positing that
he had a full on existential moment, you know?
I was going to point out that Ronald has essentially suggested that the tree has become like Tree Rorschach. And
that too.
You went low, you went high, I went, I guess medium. Watchmen is not exactly high art. Anyways.
Okay.
Once again, you've proven, along with sex having, that you are not a nerd, Lawrence, when you said that.
All right. Well, so then after Danvers drowns in quicksand, Humphrey says, like, well, we can't save him. Let's keep moving. And so then they start making their way. And at some point, there's this really, Humphreys has this really good line, really goofy line, really good line, however you want to interpret it, where he's like, I wonder if this darkness that slipped over us, if it feels like when a dead body is entombed inside a coffin. And I guess because it got a little bit darker, you know, it's a little overdramatic, but I kind of like it.
It was very, very creepy, and like the sort of it's something you wouldn't have thought of, and then you hear it, and you're like, "Wow," you know?
Right? Yeah. It's like, yeah. So, anyways, so they continue through the forest, and then they say like, "Oh, hey, the light's breaking a little bit," and I think with the exits up ahead, and weirdly, they are able to make it out of the forest. And so they make it out of the forest, and then it kind of cuts to a later time when they're in the hotel. Back in their resort, wherever they are, and they're talking, and Humphrey says, like, Claire, I don't know if you feel the same way, but I thought if we return to the hotel, I would feel safe again, but I have this feeling that the demon tree isn't done with us yet. And Claire's like, oh yeah, I feel the same way. And then I guess they go to sleep.
No. They go up to their beds to try to go to sleep. And this is where the episode takes a turn for either like a high nightmare or a high comedy, depending on sort of if you've gotten on its wavelength or not.
I feel like I was on the wavelength, but it also had the funniest line in the entire thing to me. I lost my shit. But they enter the room and they gasp. There's a tree branch on the bed, and the guy says, "Look there, a branch about 2 feet long," which Which just struck me as like, so like, there's no justification in universe for having said that. That's purely because it's radio. That's purely just the radio painting a picture, found that necessary to give you a size estimate of the demon tree gnarled branch. But like, you're there like shocked by it. It's like, look at her. It's about, oh, what do you say? 2 feet long, 2.5. Like, what?
I like to think that the guy got a producer's note on that almost, because he's like, well, you said there was a tree branch, but you know, most tree branches are kind of small and not scary. You better tell the audience how big it is, or they're not going to be frightened.
Or something, or like, yeah, like the producer's just like, look, people are going to, you know, they're going to be upset if they don't know how long the branch is. You know, it's going to ruin the whole thing. So you got to tell them.
And this
we're gonna,
also,
we're going to get letters if you don't tell us how long the branch is.
Now, this also, I mean, if you buy my theory that the tree can turn invisible, this isn't as funny, but if the tree cannot turn invisible, that means that the tree had to, like, cut off one of its own arms somehow and have it crawl into the hotel somehow, I guess by studying the guest registry, determined which room was theirs, and then let itself in and hide in the bed.
Which, oh, yeah. I guess I imagine that it was, like, the branch had come in from the window, but... If he said it's 2 feet long, I guess it's literally just like a broken off branch
detached,
in the bed.
Right, it's detached from the tree. It's just laying there like, aha, like what?
What did that even do?
It was just an amazing moment. And I really, that was the moment I really appreciated you guys inviting me on. I was just, I was hooting,
2 feet
I was
long.
And,
look, a branch, about 2 feet long.
And this, again, this is sort of the moment where it transcends like traditional logic, because there's no way that, you know, that thing could possibly have gotten in there in a non-absurd. I mean, even for a universe with a demon tree. But on the other hand, it's sort of like the nightmare's not over. You cannot escape your fate in a way that when I first heard this, like, real, you know, it's not like I was like hiding under the covers or anything, but it was like, wow, that's pretty freaky. But now that we're talking about it, I'm like, that is hilarious.
There are a couple stories up, right? I mean, they're definitely not on the first floor. I don't remember if they say what floor they're on.
I think they're at least on the third floor, as becomes ridiculously important in about a minute. So, Ronald, the branch is coming after them. How's it going to kill them?
After them, I don't know how they imagined that the branch was going to hurt them, but they run out into the hall and they're like, "Oh, let's go down." And I think he does say the floor number.
I think third floor is the one I've got in my head, at least.
Yeah, I think he does say it's...
Well, that was... Go ahead. Yeah, because I think he mentioned something like they had to get the elevator. It was like, oh, it's 3 floors down. Let's take the elevator.
And right,
too long. A tree is coming to kill them, but they have a very brief digression on the logic of why they're picking the stairs versus the elevator.
Well, yeah, because she's going to run down the stairs. And she's like, no, that's ridiculous. And it's like, dude, it's... 3 stories? Is that ridiculous to go down the stairs on?
But here's a little twist, because it turns out the elevator gate is open, and she comments, "That's dangerous," and he says, "Yes, it is." So they've got time running away. They've got time. Well, first they've got time from this waking nightmare of being stalked by a demon tree to comment that the building is not following the safety code.
But well, they also make a comment. I would like to say they make a comment here, which is just kind of a funny like timing or of the time kind of comment. She's like, "Oh, will it even come up to us?" And he says, "Oh, it's automatic. Just press the button." Because I guess this is maybe the time when like there were still elevator operators.
Yeah, that's this. I think it would have been, you know, not uncommon but not guaranteed that you would have like automatic elevator hailing instead of, I guess, shouting down the brass pipe or something. I don't know how you do it otherwise, but.
I think it might have still been you pushed a button, but the button just set up a light that the person had to respond
to.
Yeah,
just let, yeah, then the, right, yeah.
So, Ronald, do you want to take this or should I?
You go ahead and take this one.
So they're standing there sort of, I guess, aghast at this violation of the elevator safety code or something.
That's an ESNH hazard.
the branch... which is locomoting in a way that is never described and probably for the best, somehow pushes Clara down the elevator shaft to her death.
It's like, what?
And I guess the implication appears to be that the tree somehow knows enough about elevators to have staged this kill, which...
Yes.
Holy shit.
And I imagined it really, like crawling along like a caterpillar, like kind of scrunching up and then
like an inchworm. Yeah.
Yeah, inchworm, that's better.
As I think that the length of it precludes it being able to cousin it very well, you know, because like pulling along with your fingers a 2-foot long branch probably isn't going to work super good, I believe.
Yeah. I think what really is driven home by this kill in an elevator shaft is that this is basically a slasher movie starring a tree. In that it's like the whole, like, it's just setting up new and different murders every time. Like, it's following the beats of it. I would argue seriously in an academic journal that every slasher movie is actually just an adaptation of The Demon Tree from 1942.
Yeah. That checks out. Everyone has just copied this style.
They just copied this. Yeah. They just copied this episode of radio that they half remember their uncle telling them about in 1967.
Her uncle got incredibly drunk and he's like, you know, boy, you gotta be careful of the woods. There's fucking demon trees. I heard about it on the fucking radio.
No, they were reading this newspaper article. You know it's true.
You know, that actually that is kind of interesting because this does predate probably most slasher films. I mean,
you know,
obviously movies were around.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to freak you guys' bean a little bit on this, maybe.
Okay.
So the modern slasher movie grew out of the giallo movies of the 1960s. The first one is probably Black Christmas, but there's a lot of like Mario Bava and whatever movies that, you know, Twitch of the Death Nerve, etc., that kind of predate it. But there was a whole genre in like the 30s and 40s called the colorful killer genre. One's called The Bat, where it would be, you know, it would nominally be sort of a crime an absurd crime picture, but they would have a killer with a weird costume and gimmick, and the kills, although they're pretty tame by today's standards, would be fairly hard hitting by the standards of the 1940s. And that sort of is thought to have inspired the giallo movies, although it could have been like just, you know, convergent evolution. And it is also something that a little bit influenced the slasher, although they again mostly draw from the giallo.
Yeah, because
but it's there in the woodstack though. All right.
Interesting. Yeah, it's just interesting to think of like this form of like the killer of like, oh hey, there's this myth about this thing, let's go, like curiosity kills the cat and the party gets hunted down one by one. It's such a cliche now, but
yeah.
That is an interesting point to bring up, that like this actually predates most of the things that we would think that it's a cliche from. So
yeah, definitely. And even the pulp magazines that, you know, would have been not like new, but still kind of a novelty at this point, they were much less ancient history than they were now, which is, I suspect, the antecedent this thing was drawing from the most. Anyways, so we're down to one victim. How does the demon tree get it, Ronald?
You know, he just kind of... actually, Dan, you want to take this part? Because he runs away, and it's kind of a pretty short from here.
Honestly, I'm going to level with you guys. Around this time, I was like finishing up and kind of wiping up for my Tangelo, and I don't remember the very end very clearly.
may I ask you a personal question?
Please, go ahead.
How do you eat a Tangelo that you have to do such extensive cleaning after you consumed it?
Buddy. These things are so juicy. All right. I'm not, you know, I'm not going in there all willy-nilly, okay? I'm peeling. Now, a good thing about a Tangelo is it has a little knob on the top. It's like a twist-off knob. It's also really good. If you ever see Sumo Citrus in the grocery store, get those bad boys. That's a Mandarin, orange hybrid. Actually, interestingly, the orange is itself a hybrid fruit. It's not the original. The Mandarin is the original wild fruit. Anyway, it's got this little knob on the top that you can kind of twist, and that helps get the peel started. And I peel it, you know, in the standard way of kind of, going around the world, you know, kind of going down to the equator and then down to the southern hemisphere. A tried and true peeling method. The Tangelo, the Mignola Tangelo, is so juicy that unless you are just equipped with the most gossamer, almost fey-like grip, gonna be squeezing some juice droplets out of there. So I have to have like a little napkin that I do this over. And then once you're, you know, peeling the segments apart, again, unless you are just equipped with the most finely material, you know, almost just faintly ghost-like hands, then you're gonna accidentally kind of squeeze a little too much, and there's gonna be some juice going. So so anyway, that's you know, I'm not kind of barbarian here. It's just the type
I have a question.
The kind of fruit that I'm dealing with.
Yeah, do tangelos grow on trees?
Ah, they do. Oh, that's spooky, man.
You know, this whole episode raises a lot of questions about where blood oranges might come from. So anyways, fuck it. The guy runs away a little bit, then the tree starts choking him, and instead of fighting it off, he decides to narrate the act of being choked. And then the narrator comes back.
Right, which one would think would be very difficult to do.
The tree is apparently quite bad at choking, but on the other hand, he does die, so I guess I can't backseat choke it too much. But well, anyways,
he might be strangling, not choking.
That's fair. I don't know.
Which technically doesn't always block the airflow. It just, if you're strangling them, you're blocking the blood flow to your brain. That's how the sleeper hold works.
So, and then the narrator recounts the legend again that any Wakefields who go in the forest are going to die, and so does anyone who goes with him. And that's the end. Except, I have a little, there's a twist ending. You guys ready for this? It's going to blow your fucking mind, Dan. One of the actors, they mostly have normal names, but one of them, and it's a dude, is named Urilla Schofield, which I thought was very silly.
Urilla?
Urilla.
That's a new one on me.
That's
Urilla Gorilla.
That's a weird name. Oh, no, you know what? I'm looking it up now. It is Murillo Schofield. There we go.
Murillo. Okay. Murillo. Even better. Okay, so... Murillo. Now, all right. This is the 40s. Maybe someone had, like, that's a pretty good, like, late 19th century name. So maybe this was born like 1890s or something. But, like, I want to say that that's, like, the name of a type of gladiator. The different, like, outfits that the different gladiators had. I got to look this up now.
I was going to suggest that it sounded like the kind of fruit you might wax weirdly rhapsodic about. A Murillo.
It would. I'm thinking. So it turns out I'm thinking of something else. But it does look like this is a Spanish surname. So and there was a couple of Colombian presidents in the 19th century. Cuban communists in 61.
So it's a strong name wielded by powerful men who did nothing wrong.
That's precisely it. Yeah. But yes, it does sound like, you know, I could go for a nice bag of Murillos right now, honestly. Like, it's just I've been on a journey with citrus. I've been trying out other fruits. I tried this plum apricot hybrid, and boys, you want to talk a messy fruit to eat. That one was just look out for the plucots. I'll just say that.
I've had that, and my God, I really enjoyed it, but it is just it just turns into juice in your hand.
It's mush in your hand. I mean, it's delicious, and really, it's one of those fruits where the rind is actually very tasty too, and that's like a good part of the fruit.
Yeah, but
yeah. So anyway, you just this have has to been eat a really, over the fruit sink. Talk.
Yeah,
actually, I'd like to do a quick fruit bonus round if we might.
All right.
So when you guys mangoes, right? You know them, you love them, maybe you don't. Whatever. Mm-hmm. You're aware of their existence, correct?
Yeah.
When you go to eat a mango, do you eat the peel?
I do not.
I don't. I don't because I peel the mango itself and then end up like taking slices off of it until I reach like that hard core, you know, that's in there. But I've never even tried to eat the peel.
Yeah, I didn't know it was edible.
I always eat the peel because I never knew you weren't supposed to, and it is honestly my favorite part of the mango. Here's hoping they're not subtly toxic.
Yeah, we're gonna put you on an all bitter almond and mango peel diet, and you'll die of
Well, science. At least that way I won't get cancer.
That's right.
What an obscure reference. Anyways, so let's do a would you rather. This one is a quickie, so I think we can squeeze it in.
Should we wrap up with our recommendation?
Oh yeah, the demon tree.
Sorry. So, more fully, now that we've spoiled it, would you recommend this episode? I will go again. Even in spite of all the goofing, I still think that this is a minor classic of either scaring or comedy, depending on your mood, and I would urge you to check it out. There will be a link in the show notes. Dan?
I concur. This was a delight to listen to. The performances, as you mentioned, like, even given the kind of the flatness of the characters, the performances really sell it. There's just something about radio drama acting that puts so much emotion into the line reads. It's really a joy to listen to. It was very affecting.
And Ronald?
Yeah, no, same here. Same points that you both said. I really definitely liked it. I definitely got some of both the goof and some of the chill from the scare from factor of this show. So I definitely recommend this one. This was a good one.
Yeah. And let's do a quick would you rather. Ronald, you've prepared something pretty easy, so we can just knock it out, and then we'll do recommendations and cautions and take it home. What do you guys say?
Sounds good.
I would like to point out that we have talked about this episode now for conservatively three times the length of the episode.
Yeah, as is bad time radio tradition, we have much more to say about the episode than the episode did.
Yeah. Anyways, Ronald, sorry to have cut you off.
It was honestly an episode that didn't really have that much to say in the first place, and we talked about it for three times the length. So.
You know,
what does that say about us?
It's interesting because I think that there are schools of thought that say that all fiction has some kind of subtext, and I maintain that this one does not.
It's pretty overt. Okay, this is an easy one. This is a fun one. All right, you go to the gas station. You're getting a snack. One food item, one drink item. What is your go-to, your ideal, maybe what you're craving right now? Which is name one food, one drink that you usually go for.
Okay.
Lawrence, you're up first.
Okay, so this is a bit of a weird one. I'm going with the thing I take with me on road trips. My road trip go-to, green chili cheese bagels. Incredible. You get a bag of them, you just chow down. However, I'm
a bag of bagels.
Well, I'm gonna drive like I when I go on a road trip, I'm usually planning on driving 10 hours. However, I suspect you're gonna pull the they do not sell those in gas stations, you fucking moron. You've ignored the premise of the joke on me. I would probably go Cheez-Its, or if they have them, they have in New Mexico these sort of potato chips dusted with red chili that I really enjoy if I can find them there.
Oh yeah.
And
continue, Lawrence.
Nah, hit me, man.
I was gonna say I really enjoy how much your choices celebrate regional cuisine. I've never in my life heard of a green chili and cheese bagel.
Oh man,
you missed
it. If you're cool giving me your address after this off air, of course, I will send you a New Mexico care package that will you might enjoy it. I don't know. I didn't want to oversell it. I lost confidence halfway through.
No. I love doing regional delicacy food swaps. I did one with a friend of mine in Chicago where he sent me a selection of...
Wait. No. Let me guess. He sent you an enormously deep pizza and it arrived cold and you questioned his sanity?
No, it was the I forget what's it's not Giardia, that's the disease, the
those peppers they have that are so good,
the pickled like peppers and oil, like three different types. They're like three. There was like the Italian style, the Chicago style, and something else. In exchange, I sent him the original pickle flavored potato chips from Birmingham's own Golden Flake potato chip factory, and a bottle of Alabama white barbecue sauce. So I have all kinds of regional delicacies I can send your way, Lawrence. I'd be happy to do that exchange.
Awesome. And then for my drink, obviously you got to go with a half bottle or one of those medio litro, whatever the fuck that means, half liter, I think, of Mexican Coke. Best Coke you can get.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also, I might get some soda. High five, Lawrence. But no, seriously, Mexican Coca-Cola. Anyways, Ronald?
Yeah, I mean it's tough, but you know, I'm going hardcore sugar on this one. So this is just what I'm craving right now. This is one I always get, but I really like those Gushers Exploders. Sour Patch Kids Exploders, which are basically like Gushers and Sour Patch Kids mixed together. They're really freaking good. And then I'd probably do like a Mountain Dew Live Wire, even though I really try to avoid those because it's basically a full bottle of sugar, but they're really good.
Wait, the Live Wire, not the Kickstart, huh? Interesting.
Well, Kickstart's good too, but Kickstart's like a whole subgenre of Mountain Dew, and Live Wire's a flavor.
That's fair.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
And Daniel?
yeah. So I'm in there. I'm visualizing it now. I've entered my mind palace. I'm looking. Mm. I'm in my local gas station. I just fist bumped.
There's so many options.
There's so many options, but I know what I land on because I'm such a creature of habit. I know I'm going to look at them and I'm going to get the same thing I get every time. We're going to get some cheddar jalapeno Cheetos and a blue Gatorade. I'm going to just gut bomb myself with all manner of artificial coloring.
Oh, yeah. Your tongue will be purple, yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I will be nightmarish to behold, but I can't resist that spicy crunch, a little bit of, and the cool blue wave of blue Powerade.
Yeah.
Restorative. These are restorative tonics. If anyone were ever to make a like an RPG based on my life, that would be how you restore health and mana.
You know, I don't know that I've ever had cheddar jalapeno Cheetos. I'm gonna have to try that. Had all
I recommend
kinds
them.
Of Cheetos,
I but... yeah, there's the I prefer them to the Flamin' Hot, because I feel like the cheddar gives it a little more depth of flavor that's missing from the Flamin' Hot style.
I actually don't care much for the Flamin' Hot just because they taste so unlike anything that has ever existed naturally on God's green earth.
and honestly, the coloring, like, it stains your fingers to an extent no other flavor dust does.
Yeah, and you cannot get rid of that. I like Flamin' Hot, but it is like acrid how acidic that stuff is. Like, it doesn't just burn from the heat. Yeah.
Right. Cool.
All right, cool. Yeah, that's it for the Would You Rather.
Anyways, so finally, recommendations and cautions. Daniel, would you like to go first, or do you want one of us to go to give you a sense of the just sheer strangeness of the things we recommend and caution against?
I would love to hear y'all's first, and that will give me time to kind of compose myself, my answers here. But yeah, y'all go ahead. This is going to be good.
Okay, so this episode, I'm going a little bit tame, but this episode really kind of got me in the mood for like something like super dark and heavy and scary. So I'm going to recommend two movies. The first is called The Dark and the Wicked, and the second is called Z. Now, there are two movies called Z. I think the other one is about, like, fascism in Italy or something. This is the one that came out in 2019 and is, like, an evil kid movie. The Dark and the Wicked concerns a woman who goes home to care for her ailing and possibly slightly senile mother after her father has died. And both her and her brother go back to take care of their families, and they haven't been back on the ranch forever. And it just is sort of a nonstop assault of, like, it starts where you think it's going to be elevated horror and not have that many jump scares and stuff, and then it starts, like, really cut loose, and it is, like, very strong stuff. I watched it at the Guild, which is Albuquerque's local art house that I was renting out during the pandemic, and I had been trying to watch it for weeks, you know, because I'd invite someone to come see it because it's a movie with me, because it's weird to have a whole theater and just me and my wife. And I kept like saying, hey, you want to watch this movie? Hey, you want to watch this movie? And no one would ever pick it. So finally her sister, my wife's sister, took pity on me and selected it. And then they sat there and I was having a great time because it was so hard hitting. And then afterwards we got out and I'm like, what did you think? And she and her boyfriend were both like, we hate horror movies. This was awful for us. I don't know why we picked it. And Z is about a kid with an imaginary friend who motivates him to do evil, but it goes way harder than most movies with that premise and has a couple of twists. It also has an amazing Stephen McHattie performance, so I really recommend it. You can get Z on Shudder. I don't know if Dark and the Wicked is out on Shudder or not, but I would seek them both out. And for my caution, I'm going with another Shudder movie. This is Verotica, which is Glenn Danzig's directorial debut.
Oh boy.
So I only saw the first segment of this, and I will explain why that is an indictment of it. But the first segment, there is a woman, she removes her top, and it turns out that she has eyes instead of nipples, and she begins to cry, and then one of the tears from her nipple eyes falls on a spider, which of course turns into a 6'5" man with a comical French accent and multiple arms who begins to go strangle and have sex with women, and it gets dumber from there. Somehow, the second and third segments are largely plotless and incredibly boring. It does feature an epic amount of female nudity, which I am a heterosexual man who, as we have established on this episode, enjoys having sex, but I fell asleep during it, which I can't think of a bigger indictment of a movie than it had beautiful naked women, and I was so bored by it, I fell asleep. So, yeah, don't watch it. There are people who will tell you that it's like The Next Room or So Bad It's Good or So Bad It's Funny or whatever. It is too slackly edited for you to derive any enjoyment from watching it.
Just the worst of all possible worlds. Terrific.
Yeah, and also, this may be creepy and I may cut it, but most of the naked women are porn stars, and, you know, seeing them naked just doesn't have the same, like, whatever as seeing a non-porn star naked. I don't know why. Just a fact of my psychology.
Yeah, that's fair.
Anyways, Ronald, you want to go, or Dan, you ready to take a stab at it?
You know, I'm thinking now about my cautions. So, Ronald, how about you take it, and I'll be ready.
Oh, yeah. No worries. Actually, I don't have a caution today. I'm just going to make a recommendation. I haven't finished this yet, but I've been watching Reservation Dogs. I think it's on Hulu. It's a show created by Taika Waititi, and it's basically about these kids. They're Native Americans, and they live on a reservation, and they kind of are in, like, they're, you know, it's four of them, and they're, like, in their own little gang, and they kind of do crime and are trying to basically go leave the reservation, go to California. But then this other, like, rival gang starts messing with them, and they decide to, like, kind of abandon their plans to leave and stick around and try and, like, defend their territory. It's really funny. It's just quality TV. Definitely recommend.
Dan, cool. You ready?
All right, I'm up. So I got a couple of recommends. So this. The Demon Tree actually reminded me of a short story that I read in a horror collection. It's a horror writer, Brian McNaughton. And this was actually recommended to me by a coworker of mine who's much more plugged into horror than I am. I'm not very plugged into the genre at all. So he sort of, like, we do a lot of recommendations back and forth, and he thought this would be a one that I would enjoy, and I really did. So this is a collection called The Throne of Bones by Brian McNaughton, and it actually opens with a story with, I guess a little spoilers here, involves an evil pulsating garden, which is actually made up of people who have been turned into trees by an evil sorcerer type guy. So I was reminded very much of it with the kind of the bark feels like skin and things like that, because that actually comes up in the book, where a person who had been turned into a tree is felled with an axe, and it is one of the most gruesome things I've ever read in my life. It was very affecting and very good, though. So if you like gruesome shit like that, check out The Throne of Bones by Brian McNaughton.
I would like to ask you a question about this, if I might.
Yes,
so
please.
Looking at the Wikipedia summary, it appears that this collection is largely a sort of Clark Ashton Smith, like, not pastiche, but homage. Do you think, is that correct?
That is not very sure. On point. Yeah. It's kind of set in a sort of timeless, decaying empire of sorcery and wickedness. It's very much, and that's actually how my coworker came to recommend it to me, as we were talking about kind of the weird fiction guys, and I was going on and on about my love for Clark Ashton Smith.
Yeah, he does not get the credit he deserves. He's, like, a better writer than Lovecraft, and I think his action is almost as good as Howard's, and he had better ideas than either of the two, and everyone's just forgotten he existed. I will check out The Throne of Bones.
Throne of Bones. I think you'd really enjoy it, Lawrence. I think you really would. I'm also, I'm also going to recommend, I've been on a big kick of... the post-punk movement. Of course, this was, you know, the label first emerged to describe the kinds of experimental and new wave records that people who had been in punk bands in the 70s were starting to come out with in their new projects in the early 80s. But a band I've come to really, really appreciate is a band called The Sound. And I would urge everyone to check out their 1981 album From the Lion's Mouth, especially the song Winning. So if you just go to your Spotify or YouTube, check out the song Winning by The Sound. If you dig it, if you like it, they're a great band to check out. Also on YouTube is a terrific live version of the song Winning, which was performed at one of the big anti-nuclear demonstrations in 1982-83, which is really cool when a band that you love was also deeply involved in politics that are important to you too. That's always a cool thing to have that line up.
Well, assuming they're on the right side of them.
Yeah, this was nuclear disarmament. I should stress. This was not like when Robert Heinlein in 1959 started an association for the proliferation of nuclear weapons. Because he is, of course, a fucking maniac. And it's hilarious that he did this in the same year that A Canticle for Leibowitz and Alas Babylon were published. Just to kind of give you an idea of where his compatriots were at when it came to nuclear weaponry.
I can't stay mad at Heinlein, though, because his ideas are so strange and impractical that he comes off as sort of a harmless crank.
Exactly. No, he's a talented writer. I mean, that's what I hate most of all. But
yeah. He literally tried to write The Republic with like giant bug fights in it, and he like succeeded kind of. It's fucking insane. He's absolutely. Like, I'm gonna try to one up Plato while also having military org charts and
and, you know, bug aliens fights. Yeah. And I can't hold too much against Robert Heinlein because there's an anecdote that at one point, Theodore Sturgeon, who was a wonderful and very humane science fiction short story writer of the 50s and 60s, who I would urge everyone to check out, had hit some writer's block and was gonna have trouble making rent. And Robert Heinlein sent him a couple dozen kind of story prompts or hooks that he couldn't use, but he thought maybe Theodore could use these. And Sturgeon actually was able to crank a couple out and make rent that month. So, no. For all your crank beliefs and just being a really weird idiot, Heinlein, you helped my boy Theodore Sturgeon. So I
also,
can't say too
bad. Also, he's the only science fiction writer who we know for sure could keep up with L. Ron Hubbard in the fucking department, because they famously had a three-way together at one point.
That's right. Oh boy. And for a caution, I would urge everyone to take some time, take a moment to give your home HVAC unit a once over, do a little preventative maintenance. Just check in, make sure that's doing okay. Ours had been struggling to cool properly over the last like little while, and I assumed it had something to do with just it's Alabama, you know, and the humidity is really high. It's not going to run as efficiently. It does turn out that what we're probably looking at is a refrigerant leak. So everyone, you know, your HVAC loves you, send it a little love back, check in on it, and maybe you can prevent some unnecessarily sweltering days in your future.
And we also have a plug segment, but it's largely pointless because we don't have anything to plug generally. However, Dan, you actually do have things that might be pluggable. So is there something you'd like to promote?
Yeah, sure. Well, if you liked hearing me talk about a literary / performance work that I imbibed, you might enjoy The Cannonball, which is a podcast that I do with my friend and compatriot, Claude Myron Guzer, who is an actual literature scholar. And I am, but of course, a babe in the woods layman. But we have set it upon ourselves to read the Howard Bloom's list of the Western canon. And kind of just have a kind of reader, you know, kind of summary / reader response podcast to it. So we've read some of the big heavy hitters. We've read the entire Divine Comedy, Inferno, Purgatorio, and Paradiso. We've read Don Quixote. We've read most of Montaigne's essays. And the project has been a lot of fun. It's a lot of good radio. And much like with the show we've had here today, it goes off in a lot of strange directions. But if you are at all interested in literature, the kind of a reader's response to a work of art, I would recommend check out The Cannonball, co-hosted by myself.
Well, with that, thank you so much for your time tonight, Dan. And from all of us here at Bad Time Radio, you guys have yourself a wonderful 2 weeks. Talk to you later. Bye. If you'd like to recommend an episode of Old Time Radio for us to listen to, send us a question for the mailbag, or a pedantic correction, you can reach us at radiobadtime@gmail.com. Our theme music is Finger in the Bottle by We Ashore Dedicated off their album No Ski Here Okie Sap. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I was gonna gather it.